Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Little Woodrose reopens after reclassifying business by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Midland's Little Woodrose has reopened despite Governor Greg Abbott's executive order for bars to close amid rising coronavirus cases. The location on Holiday Hill Road opened July 9th, according to a Facebook post. When reached by phone, an employee said they were able to open after reclassifying their business license as a restaurant rather than a bar. A different employee said they could not provide further information without consulting their lawyer. Recent Facebook posts by the establishment show an emphasis on their food offerings, including burgers, sandwiches, and chicken wings. The About section on their page still describes Little Woodrose as a neighborhood bar. Patrons are required to wear face masks until they're seated at a table and have their temperatures checked before entering. A month ago, a Little Woodrose employee in her 20s, tested positive for the coronavirus. That employee had last worked on June 13th, according to a press release from the Midland Health Department on June 16th. Researchers rank Midland number one at saving money, from staff reports. A financial services website has Midland ranked number one in the nation as the best city for saving money. Self Financial, www.self.inc, reported last week that Midland was the top small city and the top city overall for saving money. The site shows the median salary being $114,759 and that median housing cost as a percentage of household income to be 16.9%. To determine the best places for saving money, researchers at Self Financial analyzed the latest data from the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey, the Bureau of Economic Analysis Real Personal Income, Zillow's Home Price Index, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development of Fair Market Rents. The researchers ranked metro areas according to a composite score based on three factors: real per capita personal income, 45 points, median housing costs as a percentage of median household income, 35 points, historical unemployment rate, 20 points. The report stated a staggering 37% of Americans reported that they would be unable to cover a $400 emergency expense without assistance. Airport numbers continue to decline, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Midland International Airport took another beating in June, according to its passenger report. The coronavirus pandemic and oil industry downturn again impacted a year-over-year decline of 70-plus percent. But when it came to number of passengers, fuel sales, and parking revenues, the declines weren't nearly as bad as April and May. When on passenger boardings, the 17,526 in June was a 70.2% decrease as compared to June 2019. But even that was a boost from the 82.3% drops in May and 89.5% in April. Fuel sales in June dropped 49.7% year over year, but that was an improvement compared to the declines in May and April. Lastly, parking revenues were down 63.6% compared to June 2019, but again, there were improvements compared to May and April, when the year-over-year declines were 73.7%, respectively. With 3 months left in the fiscal year, there is not enough time or activity to rescue year-to-date numbers, which are down dramatically year-over-year. Boardings, 31.8%, fuel, sales, 20.1%, and parking revenues, 28%. July has featured record-breaking temperatures, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. It's been a hot month of July. How hot? Well, if the month ended today, there would be a new record for the hottest month in Midland's history. The National Weather Service reported that going into Friday, the average temperature in July was 89 degrees. That comes from the average of the average high, 102.7 degrees, and low, 75.3 degrees. The typical average temperature in July is 82.2 degrees. The current record is 88.2 degrees in July 2016. A driver of the record-breaking heat so far was the seven straight days of at least 105 degrees. That streak was the second longest in the city's recorded history. The average temperature also has been impacted by the 13 total days of 100-degree temperatures during the first 17 days this month. Heading into the Saturday, there have been 10 straight days of at least 100 degrees. That is tied for the ninth longest streak all time. The temperatures this week are expected to take a cooler turn, with highs in the mid-90s and lows around 73 or 74. City. Three deaths pushes week total to 9. From staff reports. The City of Midland reported on Saturday 3 more coronavirus-related deaths. The 3 deaths bring the total this week to 9, the most reported in 1 week during the pandemic, and the total during the pandemic to 28. The city reported 2 patients, a male in his 80s and a female in her 90s, died Friday. The third patient, a female in her 40s, died Saturday. All 3 were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. The 3 deaths in Midland County are the most reported in 1 day. The 40-year-old woman is the youngest person to have died. The number of deaths reported in July also are close to reaching the total heading into the month. The 3 on Saturday brings the July total to 13, which is more than double the highest total of any other month, 6 in May. Before June, there had not been more than 4 deaths reported in any 1 week.
Obituaries. Bruce F. Harper. Bruce Harper, March 20, 1942 to July 15, 2020. It is with great sadness and much love that we announce the passing of Bruce Papa Harper, our loving husband, father, grandfather, and friend. Bruce was delivered into this world on March 20, 1942 and joined our Heavenly Father on July 15, 2020. Bruce was the son of Carmen and Jack Harper of San Marcos, Texas. He graduated from San Marcos High School in 1960, and from there began studies at Kemper Military School before transferring to McMurry University in Abilene, Texas. It was there that he became smitten with Linda Bryant and married her shortly after graduation in 1965. They moved back to his hometown of San Marcos, and Bruce joined his father managing the Cash Seed Farm. He and his father, Jack, then obtained a controlling interest in the First National Bank of San Marcos, where he served as president for many years. During this time, they raised 3 boys who would be his pride and joy, Jeff, Greg, and Jack. Bruce took much pride in their activities and school. A favorite pastime was spending many hours on the lake, teaching countless friends and family how to ski and also road tripping to Red River for snow skiing or jeeping. Bruce was very proud of his hometown of San Marcos. He was an active member of First United Methodist Church and extra fond of the Jack Hughes Sunday School class. He never met a stranger and spent a great amount of time meeting people and knowing their stories. He loved his employees and co-workers and always treated them with the utmost respect. Giving back to his city was paramount to him. He served many years on the CTMC Hospital Board and was very involved in getting the new hospital built. He also spent many years on the boards of the Upper San Marcos Watershed, United Way of Hays County, San Marcos Chamber of Commerce, and the San Marcos Industrial Foundation. In his later days, Bruce enjoyed his job as Papa, loving on his 4 grandchildren who he cared deeply for. He was passionate about meeting up for coffee at Mochas and Java's on Saturday mornings, where he would fraternize with anyone in the room and make them laugh. You could also count on finding him at Figaro's Pizza and Pub, working as an honorary host. He is preceded in death by his parents, Carmen and Jack Harper. He is survived by his sons, Jeff Harper, Greg Harper, and wife Michelle, and Jack Harper, and wife Shelley. And by grandchildren, Pharrell Harper, Caroline Harper, Olivia Harper, and Bryce Harper. A visitation will be held Sunday, July 19, from 4 to 6 p.m. at Pennington Funeral Home. Burial will be Monday, July 20 at 10 a.m. at San Marcos Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be directed to First United Methodist Church, San Marcos, or visit us at Figaro's. Arrangements entrusted to Pennington Funeral Home, 323 North Comanche, San Marcos, Texas, 512-353-4311, www.penningtonfuneralhome.com. Maria Maldonado Heredia. Maria Maldonado Heredia of Midland, Texas, passed away peacefully on Thursday, July 16th. She was born in Midland, Texas, to Manuel and Felipa Maldonado on August 31, 1939. Maria devoted her life to God and spent her free time with her family. Family was the core of her life. She was a kind and genuine woman who had plenty of love for everyone. She is survived by her children, daughter Alicia Sandate, Oscar, four sons, Jesse Heredia and Tony Heredia, Manuel Heredia, and Jose Luis Heredia, as well as her sister, Manuela Munoz, and brother, Manuel Maldonado. She is also survived by her 8 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, her 2 brothers, and her sister. Viewing 1 will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin from 1 p.m. to 2:45 p.m. Viewing 2 will be held from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., as well as on Sunday, July 19th. Rosary will follow on Sunday, July 19th at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin. Mass will be Monday, July 20th at Our Lady of Guadalupe in the Shrine at 10 a.m. The burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Names of pallbearers are Louis Rawls, Chris Gallegos, Gilbert Gallegos Jr., Cesar Sanchez, Sammy Martinez, and Ray Martinez. Honorary pallbearers are the grandkids and great-grandkids. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Interim Healthcare Home, Care and Hospice, as well as all family and friends. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Billy Joe Moore. Billy Joe Moore, 95, of Midland, passed away July 16, 2020. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his wife, Joyce Moore, and a stepson, Scott Foe. Deborah Louise Capala. Deborah Louise Capala, 66, of Midland, passed away July 11, 2020. A gathering will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 22, 2020, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Survivors include husband, James E. Capala. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jacqueline Marie Job. Jacqueline Marie Job, 58, of Midland, passed away Thursday, July 9, 2020, at her residence. She was born in Midland on November 19, 1961, to the late Loretta Gibson and J.W. Gregory. Memorial service will be Saturday, July 25, 2020, at 1 p.m. at Living Way Four Square Church. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 19th, 2020. Section A. City Council and Mayor's seats up for grabs. Some hope to switch positions during November election. The mayor's seat, as well as multiple city council seats, will be open to newcomers this November, while some current elected officials look to change positions. The seats up for the November 2020 election include mayor, city council District 1, District 2, and at-large. City Secretary Norma Grimaldo wrote in an email that filers can turn in paperwork starting Monday. The last day to file is by 5 p.m., August 17th. There is no filing fee. Some current elected officials who are terming out of their current seats are looking to run for a different position in city government. Current District 2 Councilman Dewey Bryant said during a phone interview he is running for mayor. He said the reason he's running is because he wants to continue to get things done in the community. We've had a number of setbacks, and we need to make sure we move forward as one of the best cities in this world and not take a step back. I want to make sure we progress. There are a lot of things that we're in the process of entertaining and planning, and I wanted to make sure that continues, he said. Current Mayor David Turner, who terms out as mayor this year, said he is considering a run at city council, but still has yet to decide if he will or not. Some new names are also considering the open positions. Current regional director for U.S. Congressman Mike Conaway, Gloria Apollinario, said she picked up a packet from City Hall, but with all the open seats, she isn't quite sure what position she'll be running for. She said when people see her name on a ballot, she wants them to know that she's a servant at heart, she said, adding that she's worked for Conaway nearly 7 years and was also the district representative, the district director for former state representative Tryon Lewis for about 7 years. I've always been behind the scenes. I just want to help push the process, but this time I feel compelled to do something about it and make a difference, she said. She added that it would be an opportune time with Conaway stepping down at the end of the year. Current at-large council member Peggy Dean said in a phone interview that she would not run again. Consequently, this has taken much more time than I ever anticipated, she said. Dean said that she wished she had started council earlier in her life and that she spends a lot of time doing council work. She said she has loved being on council and has been involved in many council committees and task forces. She added that she plans to still be an advocate for the city and hopes to remain on certain task forces. Another familiar name is seeking a seat as former District 1 Councilmember Joanne Davenport Littleton is running for the at-large position, saying she wants to represent the whole city. She said that the current political climate inspired her to run for City Council again and that she can bring a lot to the table. She also said that she loves Odessa and City Council work. Having served on the council for 8 years, I've had a lot of things accomplished, and with all the racial tensions that we have in the country now, we definitely need people in leadership positions who understand and who will deal with the issues, because things aren't going to get any better, she said, adding that with current issues like police brutality and the pandemic, people need leadership that doesn't ignore those issues. Current District 1 Council Member Reverend Michael K. Shelton Sr. said that he will seek a full term for the seat he was appointed to earlier this year following Malcolm Hamilton's resignation. Shelton said he's running for the seat for the people of District 1. The main thing for District 1 is for our young people to get out and vote. Don't talk, don't do nothing, go to the booth and make your choice. You make your choice, you make your change, he said. Grimaldo wrote in an email that election packets are available in the city secretary's office. She wrote that a petition is required of 50 registered voters for each designated district or any City of Odessa registered voter for mayor or at large. Back the Blue event in Odessa by Michael Bauer. Monty Garner has grown up with people who have worked as first responders. She knows what they have to go through every day on the job for community. On Saturday, she and a few other Odessa residents showed their support with a Back the Blue rally outside City Hall. The event was a part of a nationwide movement with similar rallies going on at City Halls in other towns across the country that same day. We're supporting our police officers and our first responders, Garner said. We're letting them know just how grateful we are for their services every day. They're protecting us every day, and we want them to know that they're dearly loved and cherished. Garner's grandfather was a police officer, and her dad was a fire captain. I'm so grateful for the service that they gave, Garner said. I'm grateful today for the men and women who serve. If there's any way we can let them know that we're praying for them and appreciating everything they can do. Garner says Odessa has always had great support for its first responders. I always feel like Odessa has the largest heart in the community. I feel like we are a community of servants, she said. I see that in so many different ways. In that servanthood, we recognized the importance of our first responders. Jamie Butts, another Odessa resident, was one of the people at the rally. We came out here to support our first responders and what they do, he said. They don't get enough honor for that, so we're hoping that they see that we care. The event comes during a summer where protests across the country after events such as George Floyd's death in Minneapolis have called for the defunding of police. Just because some responders may have made a poor choice doesn't mean that the whole group is bad, Garner said. Remove the bad apple, and you still have 99% of amazing men. To sacrifice every day to walk out and serve the community, how can you say that they're not of value? Butts echoed those thoughts. They need more training, Butts said. Everybody does. You need training and to protect and to grow, but to defund is completely ignorant. MCH reports 3 more COVID-19 related deaths. Medical Center Health System has reported 3 more COVID-19 related deaths, bringing its total to 28. The 26th patient, a 71-year-old female from Andrews, died Friday afternoon, according to a release issued by Medical Center Health System. The patient was admitted to Medical Health Center Hospital July 8th and had pre-existing conditions. The 27th patient, an 82-year-old male who was a resident at Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation in Odessa, died late Friday. The patient was admitted to Medical Center Hospital July 15th and had pre-existing conditions. The 28th patient, a 71-year-old female who was a resident of Ector County, died Saturday afternoon. The patient was admitted to Medical Center Hospital June 30th. And had pre-existing conditions. MCH has 36 COVID-19 positive patients in-house. The critical care unit has 8 patients with 3 on ventilators. 27 patients are on the COVID isolation floors, 7 central and 8 central. There is also 1 COVID patient on the labor and delivery floor. Odessa Arts Virtual Art Gallery, ready for public viewing. In April, Odessa Arts was preparing to exhibit the newest additions to the Community Art Gallery in City Hall. Due to the COVID-19 outbreak, it was determined that setting up the exhibit and the subsequent visitations of the public would pose a health risk. Odessa Arts was fortunately able to import all the images into a virtual art gallery, and it is now ready for public viewing. One of the added bonuses is that OA has virtual room to exhibit all 3 artworks by each artist, where the Odessa Arts would have only exhibited 1 at City Hall. Each of these art pieces is available for purchase directly from the artist, and the public is encouraged to vote on their favorite piece as well. This will aid in determining which piece will be purchased by the City of Odessa to add to the permanent collection. To view the gallery, visit tinyurl.com/YXMTZOZW. The Odessa Arts hopes to be able to exhibit these works in the physical space when it is safe for city staff, the artists, and the general public to do so. For more information, call 337-1492, email randy@odessaarts.org, or visit odessaarts.org. Obituaries for Sunday, July 19th. Margaret Elizabeth Thompson Bullock. Margaret Elizabeth Bullock, 70, passed away at her home in Odessa Wednesday, July 15th. She was born in Alexandria, Minnesota, May 31st, 1950, to the late Russell and Mildred Van Dyke Thompson. Surviving her are her nieces and nephews, Pamela C. Hughes and husband Terry, Quanna Thompson and wife Floricita, Karen R. Thompson Bates, Jennifer A. Thompson, and Corey Thompson, as well as 14 great nieces and nephews, 19 great great nieces and nephews, and 2 great 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 nieces and nephews. Her best friend and adopted daughter, Charlotte Madden, and numerous cousins and extended family. She was preceded in death by her parents, Russell and Mildred Thompson, her husband, Bart Bullock, daughter, Esther Rose, brother, Warren E. Thompson, a nephew, and a niece. No services will be held at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel and Crematory, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Janelle Heaton. Janelle Heaton, 91, of Arlington, passed away July 14th in Bedford. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, July 20th at Sunset Memorial Gardens with the Reverend Robert Bratcher officiating. Janelle, the only child of John W. and Dovey Ashworth, was born in Fort Stockton, June 20th, 1929. She married Thomas N. Heaton in 1949, and their marriage lasted until Thomas' death in 1988, 39 years. Janelle is preceded in death by her parents, and she is survived by her daughter Jan and son-in-law Larry Autry, a granddaughter, and a grandson. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Dawn Nell Crowder Tellez. Dawn Nell Tellez of Sweetwater passed away Tuesday, July 14th in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 21st at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Dawn was born in Sweetwater to Artis and Wanda Crowder. She is preceded in death by her father, Artis Crowder, and parents Donald and Wanda Ottinger. She is survived by her husband, Anthony Tellez, and her children, Donald Atkins, Joshua Tellez, Monica Simon, and husband Joey, sister-in-law Christina Tellez Almaguer, and son Christopher. She is also survived by 2 grandchildren. Memorials may be sent to Sunset Memorial Services in Odessa. To send condolences to the family, please sign the guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. W.J. Deeds. W.J. Deeds, 93, passed away July 16th. He was born July 22nd, 1926, in Lone to James Oliver Deeds and Maud Beatrice Sansom Deeds. He married Lois Byram Deeds in 1951 in Dequeen, Arkansas. He is survived by 3 children, Joyce Renega, Wade Deeds, and Regina Collinsworth, and their spouses, Mike Renega, Georgia Deeds, and Gary Collinsworth. 9 grandchildren, 28 great-grandchildren, and 8 great-great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, James Riley and Maud Beatrice Deeds, his wife, Lois, a son-in-law, Mike Renega, his brothers, James Audley Deeds, Clarence Douglas Deeds, Wesley Merle Deeds, and his twin brother, J.R. Deeds, sisters Audra Eleanor Deeds Lewis, Nora Pearl Deeds Henderson, and Marietta Maud Deeds Dunn. Visitation at Acres West Funeral Chapel begins at noon Tuesday, July 21st. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, July 23rd at West University Church of Christ in Odessa. Graveside services will be at Cox Cemetery in Mercury, Friday, July 24th at 2 p.m. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the Odessa Humane Society or Christian Children's Home in Portales, New Mexico. Maria Teresa Terry Rodriguez Key, Las Cruces. Maria Terry Key departed life July 10th. She was born September 8th, 1935 in Esmeralda, Coahuila, Mexico, and emigrated to Texas at the age of 18. She was preceded in death by her husband, Henry D. Key, parents Ignacio Rodriguez and Julia Rodriguez Villarreal, brother Jesus Rodriguez, and a great-grandson. She is survived by her daughters, Benita Cook and Judy Clemens, and husband David, and sons Renee Key and Henry Key, and wife Brandy, brothers Francisco and wife Chole, Ignacio and wife Benita, and Fernando and wife Betty, sisters Martha and husband Francisco, Antonia, Lilia and husband Queno, and Bertha, four grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and many nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. A celebration of life was already held while Terry was still here to enjoy family visits and mariachis, and her cremains will be buried next to Henry at Concord Cemetery in Cherokee County, Texas, at a later date. Arrangements are by Getz Funeral Home of Las Cruces. Please visit www.getzcares.com to sign the local online guestbook. Patricia Ann Pat Lassiter Flowers, Grand Prairie. Patricia Ann Flowers was born July 25th, 1949, to Marvin Lassiter and Elizabeth Martin in Leveland. She married Larry Flowers in 1970. Pat is preceded in death by her parents, Marvin and Elizabeth Lassiter, stepmother Lena Wingo, stepsister Barbara, and her husband Larry Flowers. She is survived by her stepbrother Joel Parsons, his daughter Delilah Woodward, her two girls, Madison and Mallory of Grand Prairie, as well as cousins and a godson, Sam Skidmore of Belton. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 21st at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, you can give donations to the American Heart Association or donate to your nearest library. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Juan Lara. Juan Lara, 96, of Odessa, died Saturday, July 11th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Refugio Rivera Cuco Horta, Jr. Refugio Rivera Cuco Horta, Jr., 72, of Odessa, died Monday, July 13th. A graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Monday, July 27th at Odessa 2 Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Gustavo Arturo Sanchez. Gustavo Arturo Sanchez, 45, of Odessa, died Monday, July 13th in Lubbock. A celebration of life is scheduled for 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 25th at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, July 20th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD, School Reentry to take place August 19th. More information will be available August 3rd, Riddick says. By Stuart Doreen. As far as Midland Independent School District is concerned, reentry will take place August 19th as expected, Superintendent Orlando Riddick said during an online update last week. Whether that's all at-home instruction or on-campus instruction remains to be seen, Riddick said. There are still conversations to be had with local health officials, especially when it comes to the city's response to coronavirus. The Midland Health Department on Friday showed an average of more than 40 confirmed cases a day inside Midland County in July. Parents, students, and staff can expect to know more specifics about reentry on August 3rd, Riddick said. Three options will be part of the MIST reentry process. Traditional on-campus option, online academy, a fully virtual school, and a combination of the two, he said. The online academy will build upon the work that started last spring to provide a richer, more robust online learning experience for those families who choose this option, Riddick stated in a press release Friday. Midland ISD also reported, per Texas Education Agency requirements, that families will not be asked to finalize their commitment to virtual or in-person learning until 2 weeks before the start of the school year. Moreover, they can switch between in-person and online learning at the end of a grading period. MISD has created a page on its website to provide more information about the reentry process, midlandisd.net/fall2020. The Fall 2020 reentry page will be updated throughout the summer and fall with information about protocols and procedures to help keep students and staff healthy, safe, and learning, according to the district. Information is subject to change based on a number of factors, including Texas Education Agency guidelines and local, state, and nationwide directives. Masks and temperature checks. The on-campus experience will be changed, Riddick said last week. While the details are not yet set, he expected social distancing in the classrooms. He also said temperature checks and masks will be vital. Temperature checks will take place as kids get on the bus and as they arrive at school, Riddick said. He also said he hoped families will have students prepared to wear masks beginning on the first day of school. If you have little ones and you want them in a mask, don't let August 19th be the first day they're putting a mask on, Riddick said. You want them to get used to how it feels and getting their ears ready. Teachers will have masks and face shields to wear in the classroom. Reentry chart. Riddick said reentry will be based on the level of coronavirus community spread. There are three categories, low or no, moderate, and substantial, which are outlined on a chart on Fall 2020. At low or no spread, school buildings are open, and the online academy will be available for families in grades pre-K to 12 who choose to enroll in 100% online school. At moderate spread, on-campus instruction takes place Monday through Friday for PK, pre-K, life skills, and self-contained autism students. Dyslexia and speech therapy students are on campus Monday through Thursday. In this second category, there is limited and staggered use of school buildings as part of a blended learning instruction for other students. There will be no change for online academy students. During temporary building closures due to confirmed coronavirus cases, all students will access instructions via Google Classroom. In the substantial level of community spread category, all buildings are closed until further notice. All students access instruction via Google Classroom. This article is entitled, Former County Employee to Join Race for MISD District 1. Michael Booker said it is time for a new face, new voice, by Stuart Doreen. Michael Booker has joined the race for school board in East Midland. The soon-to-be 33-year-old told the Reporter-Telegram that he will run for the District 1 seat, which is currently occupied by James Fuller. The election, one of four school board seats on the ballot, will take place in November. District 1 is bordered by Loop 250 to the north and includes areas around the following campuses: Milam Elementary, Lee Freshman High School, Pease Communications and Technology, Coleman High School, General Tommy Franks Elementary, the former Crockett Elementary, Washington STEM Academy, and Carver Center. Booker, a lifetime Midlander and graduate of Midland ISD School, said his campaign will be about what he wants to see for the school district. He said there is no reason that Midland ISD can't perform better academically, and that the district needs to do more to keep its facilities top-notch. People should be proud to say they go to school in District 1, said Booker, a former Marine and former employee at the Barbara Culver Juvenile Detention Center and Midland County Sheriff's Office. He said his campaign isn't going to be about what isn't taking place, but that he wants to be a difference maker with the board and superintendent. He said it is time for a new face and new voice in District 1. I want to be more involved, Booker said, and get parents more involved. I want to hear their concerns and take them to the board. I feel that I have the ability to listen to my district about their concerns and needs, as well as be the voice that will bring action to have academic success for all children, he said. Booker and his wife have four children, and they attend True Light Christian Fellowship. His community involvement includes being a coach and referee in youth leagues and high school leagues for football, basketball, and baseball. Booker and Matt Galindo are the only two people to tell the Reporter-Telegram of their intention to run for the school board in November. Saturday was the first day a person could file for school board, and the filing period ends 5 p.m. August 17th, according to the Texas Association of School Boards. This article is entitled, Filing Period Begins for MISD, Midland College, and Hospital District, by Stuart Doreen. The filing period has started for local elections scheduled to take place in November. While many know President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will be on the general election ballot November 3rd, there also will be races for positions on the board that oversee Midland ISD, Midland College, and the Midland County Hospital District. In the case of MISD and the Hospital District, a majority of board seats are scheduled to come up for election. The filing period started Saturday and continues through 5 p.m. August 17th. Midland ISD. Four of the seven seats will be on the ballot, Districts 1, 2, 4, and 7. District 1 is in East Midland. It is bordered by Loop 250 to the north and includes areas around the following campuses: Milam Elementary, Lee Freshman High School, Pease Communications and Technology, Coleman High School, General Tommy Franks Elementary, the former Crockett Elementary, Washington STEM Academy, and Carver Center. District 2 starts in southeast Midland and heads south. The district includes the areas around the following campuses: De Zavala Elementary, Midland High, South Elementary, Travis Elementary, and Midland Freshman High School. District 4 starts in central Midland and extends to the southwest. The district includes the areas around the following campuses: Bowie Fine Arts Magnet, Houston Collegiate Prep, Lamar Elementary, Long Elementary, and Burnett Elementary. District 7 is northwest Midland. The district includes the areas around the following campuses: Great House Elementary, Faskin Elementary, and Park Elementary. Current office holders are James Fuller, District 1, Robert Marquez, District 2, John Kennedy, District 4, and Brian Murray, District 7. A packet with the application forms and other important information can be picked up beginning today at Midland ISD Superintendent's Office, 615 West Missouri Avenue, according to Midland ISD. Because of COVID-19 guidelines, email veronica.ramirez@midlandisd.net for more information or appointment times to pick up a packet and or return the application. Go to midlandisd.net/page/33311 for more information about trustee elections. Midland College. Three of the nine Midland College seats are scheduled to be on the ballot in November. They are places 7, 8, and 9. Midland College's seats are at-large positions, so any person can run for any seat, and all eligible voters within the college district vote on each place. Current office holders are Will Green, place 7, Ralph Way, place 8, and Scott Kidwell, place 9. Bahola Edwards, assistant to the president and board of trustees, coordinates voting. Anyone wishing to file for the board can pick up information from Edwards. Her office is located in the president's office, located in the Peavey House Administration Building. Midland County Hospital District. 4 of the 7 positions on the Midland County Hospital District are scheduled to be on the ballot in November. They are Districts 1, 2, 5, and 6. District 1 is generally East Midland, stretching out into the county north of Interstate 20. District 2 is Southeast Midland County, the area southeast of the intersection of I-20 and State Highway 349. District 5 is an area of Central Midland, south of Loop 250, west of Big Spring Street, and north of Golf Course Road. The western boundary is in the vicinity of Midkiff Road. District 6 is an area of West Midland. The south boundary is Andrews Highway. It extends out to Grasslands Estates and includes the area west of Midland Drive and north to Briarwood Avenue. Current office holders are Tracy Green, District 1, Dwayne Tomlin, District 2, Carrie Chaplin, District 5, and District 6 is unoccupied. The physical address for filing applications in person for place on the ballot is Midland Memorial Hospital, 400 Roslyn Redfern Grover Parkway. Laura Isbell is the contact.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, July 20th. Safety always a concern during hot weather. This is a guest column by Carol Cates, who is the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. This week had been especially brutal when it comes to heat, but heat in the summer in West Texas is always something we need to be concerned about. Because we are used to the heat, it is sometimes easy to forget how dangerous hot weather can be. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, estimates that 600 people die from extreme heat every year in the U.S. About 37 of those deaths are kids under 2 who are left in hot cars. Those at highest risk for heat-related illnesses are children under age 2, people over 65, those with chronic illnesses, and those with mental illnesses that affect judgment. 2 main things affect the body's ability to cool itself: high humidity, because sweat doesn't evaporate quickly, and personal factors such as age, obesity, fever, dehydration, heart disease, mental illness, poor circulation, sunburn, and prescription drug and alcohol use, because they affect judgment and/or the body's ability to cool. If you are caring for others in hot weather, make sure they are drinking plenty of water and that they are taking breaks to cool off in air-conditioned areas or shade. Check on friends and neighbors and have them do the same for you, and never leave children or pets unattended in cars. Those at high risk for heat-related illness should stay in air-conditioned areas as much as possible. In times of extreme heat warnings or advisories, have a backup plan that extends beyond fans for cooling if you do not have access to air conditioning at home for any reason. Drink lots of water, and don't wait until you are thirsty to drink. Plan meals that do not use the stove or oven, because they will make you and your house hotter. Even those at lower risk can suffer from heat-related illness if they do not take precautions during extreme heat. Limit outdoor activities as much as possible, particularly at midday when the heat is at its worst. Wear and reapply sunscreen as recommended on the package. Drink more water than usual and pay attention to cramps. They may be an early sign of heat-related illness. Wear loose, lightweight, light-colored clothing. There are several types of heat-related illness: heat stroke, heat exhaustion, heat cramps, sunburn, and heat rash. Heat stroke symptoms include high body temperature, generally greater than 103 degrees, hot, red, dry, or damp skin, fast, strong pulse, headache, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and loss of consciousness. Heat stroke can be fatal, So it is crucial that if someone is showing the signs of heat stroke, that the person with them calls 911 immediately to get help. As you are waiting for the ambulance to arrive, cool the person down by moving them to a cooler place and lower their temperature with cool cloths or a cool bath. Do not give them anything to drink, however. Heat exhaustion symptoms include heavy sweating, cold, pale, and clammy skin, fast, weak pulse, nausea or vomiting, muscle cramps, tiredness or weakness, dizziness, headache, or fainting. If someone is showing signs of heat exhaustion, move them to a cool place, loosen clothing, cool their body with cool cloths or a cool bath, and have them sip water. If that person is vomiting, symptoms get worse, or the symptoms last more than an hour, they also need to seek medical attention. Heat cramps are generally caused by heavy sweating and physical activity. The symptoms are muscle pain or spasms. In those cases, stop the activity, move to a cool place, drink water or sports drinks, and wait for the cramps to go away before resuming physical activities. Seek medical attention if the cramps last more than 1 hour, or if you are on a low-sodium diet, or have heart problems. Sunburn is characterized by painful, red, warm skin, and severe sunburns can also cause blisters. If you get a sunburn, stay out of the sun until it heals. The best remedy for sunburn is prevention. Use sunscreen as directed on the package, and wear hats or light clothes that cover as much skin as possible. If you get sunburned, cool the skin with cool cloths or cool baths. Do not break blisters. Moisture sunburned skin with oil-free moisturizers. Heat rash is red clusters of small blisters that look like pimples, usually on the neck, chest, groin, or in elbow creases. To avoid and heal heat rash, stay in cool, dry places, keep the rash dry, and use moisture-wicking powders, cornstarch-based powders, for instance, to cool the rash. Please stay safe and stay cool during these hot summer days. COVID-19 News by the Numbers. Editor's note, Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers on Friday afternoon, and the CDC last updated COVID-19 numbers on Saturday afternoon. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 2,305. Ector County negative, 10,182 out of 13,252 tested, with 765 pending. 27 deaths. Recovered, 1,053. Active cases, 1,225. Midland County, 1,387 confirmed cases with 28 deaths. Texas, 325,030 confirmed cases with 3,207,857 tested. Total Texas deaths, 3,958. U.S. cases, 3,630,587 total confirmed cases and 138,782 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tctrjlf. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Free COVID-19 testing. The city of Odessa has scheduled free mobile COVID-19 testing this month at the following dates, times, and locations. On Tuesday, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., at Lawndale Park, 9201 Rainbow Drive. On July 23rd, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., at Floyd Quinn Park, 1015 North County Road West. On July 28th, from from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Slater Park, 1001 West 38th Street. On July 30th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Dan Hemphill Central Park, 1201 East 13th Street. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event. The parking lot will open up at 7 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. Do not arrive before then. Participants must remain in their vehicle with the window up until a testing team member approaches you. Bring ID, no appointments or pre-registration required. Children ages 3 and up if child is cooperative. For more information, call 582-7969 or visit odessa-tx.gov. Back to school donations. First Basin Credit Union has officially kicked off the 5th annual Back to School Donation Drive, benefiting children of the Rainbow Room of the Permian Basin. While there are many unknowns of how classes will look in 2020-2021, First Basin wants to ensure the children are prepared with what they need under any circumstance. First Basin is requesting monetary donations be made at any FBCU location in Odessa, Midland, or Andrews, account number 80001-01. First Basin will kick off the drive with a $500 donation. All monies raised will be presented to the Rainbow Room to purchase what the students will need as school districts make plans known. The Rainbow Room works with Child Protective Services, CPS, and helps foster children and all other children involved in CPS care throughout Midland, Odessa, Andrews, and surrounding counties. First Basin strongly feels every child deserves the opportunity to have the supplies they need to be successful and confident in school, and is always ready to support the Rainbow Room. Donation deadline is July 31st. For information regarding the school drive benefiting the Rainbow Room, call Janet Sotelo, Community Engagement Coordinator, at 248-1443.
Obituaries, published in the Odessa American, Monday, July 20th. George Weldon Snap. George Weldon Snap of Midland went to be with his Lord on July 17th, 2020. Services will be Wednesday, July 22nd, 1 p.m. at First Baptist Church Chapel, Midland, with Dr. Darren Wood officiating. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa with Masonic graveside rites. George was born March 27th, 1932 in Fisher County, Texas, to the late David and Leslie Snap. He is preceded in death by his parents, one son, Jimmy, daughter-in-law, Beth Snap, wife, Jimmy, two sisters and two brothers. He is survived by his wife, Joyce of Midland, his son, David, and wife, Derry of Odessa, two daughters, Karen Phillips and husband, Ricky of Fort Worth, and Annette DeStasi and husband, Gus of Carrollton, four grandsons and three granddaughters, Josh Snap, Chris Snap, Jeremy Snap, Logan Doris, Lindsay Bengoguleri, Lacey Bryant, Jessica Clark, and 13 great-grandchildren. He is also survived by three stepdaughters, Vicki Parker and husband Scott of Big Spring, Terry Gardner and husband Rick of Blanchard, Oklahoma, Demetra Johns and husband Lonnie of Pontotoc, Texas, one stepson, Lee Daggett and wife Ravis of Fort Stockton, many step-grandchildren and step-great-grandchildren. Also surviving George is one brother, Benny Snap of Brownwood, and many nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, please consider donations to Heart of Texas Baptist Camp, 8025 FM 2125, Brownwood, Texas, 76801. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Susan Marie Crin. Mrs. Susan Marie Kryn passed away unexpectedly July 16, 2020, in Odessa at the age of 67. Susan is survived by her parents, Martin and Alice Haybecker of Warner Robins, Georgia, husband John Kryn, her two daughters, Althea Rutherford and Nicole Gerardo, siblings Debbie Grierson, Marty Haybecker, Michael Haybecker, 9 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, and 6 nieces and nephews. Susan was born August 5, 1952, in Burlington, Vermont, to parents Martin Van Buren Haybecker and Alice Eleanor Marquise. Her memorial service is scheduled for July 21, 2020, at 2 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Flowers, donations, and condolences may be offered at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny Street, Odessa, Texas, 79761. Death Notices. Patricia Ann Pat Flowers. Patricia Ann Pat Flowers, 70, of Grand Prairie, died Sunday, July 12th in Grand Prairie. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. July 21st at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Joel Dean Cox. Joel Dean Cox, 63, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 15th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Monday, July 20th, 2020, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.